Conrad and Arturo checked out of the hotel and headed for the train station early the next morning. Now that he was ready to take up the trail again, Conrad didn't want to risk being delayed in any way. Harcourt met them at the station.
I've engaged Mallory to see what he can find out about Pamela Tarleton's maid or nanny or whatever you want to call her. How can I get in touch with you if I have any information, Conrad?
I'm afraid I don't know where I'll be, other than in Kansas City a couple of days from now. I'll wire you when we get there, Charles. And I'll stay in touch by telegraph whenever it looks like we're going to be in one place long enough to make that practical.
All right. Good luck in your search. Don't hesitate to let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
Conrad and Arturo boarded the train and settled in for the trip to Chicago and then Kansas City. Conrad knew it would be difficult to find out where Pamela had gone from Kansas City, but he carried considerable influence with the railroad. Any records that might still exist would be 3 years old, but he intended to have a look at all of them. If Pamela had paid cash for her and the maid's tickets, there would be no record of her name. On the other hand, Pamela's beauty and her imperious attitude made her easy to remember. Conrad held on to the hope that someone connected to the railroad might recall her and even remember where she had been going. He wore the shoulder harness for the two Colt Lightnings again and didn't intend to be without them during the journey. The civilized East had proven to be just about as dangerous as the so-called uncivilized West. Arturo brought him a light lunch from the dining car, but by the time evening rolled around, Conrad wanted an actual meal. He announced his intention to walk up to the dining car for supper.
Join me, Arturo.
That would hardly be appropriate, sir. You are my employer.
I know that, but I consider you a friend as well.
But I don't consider you a friend. You are my employer.
Come on. I'll make it an order if I have to.
Very well. Are you going to order me to enjoy myself as well?
I just might.
Well, in that case, I shall do my best to comply.
Arturo pasted an artificial-looking smile on his face. Two regular passenger cars were between the dining car and the Pullman where Conrad's compartment was. He and Arturo walked through the passenger cars and were soon seated at a table in the dining car, where a white-jacketed waiter brought them a bottle of wine and a couple of steaks with numerous trimmings. The railroads weren't noted for their cuisine, but Conrad thought the food was all right. It beat prairie hen roasted over an open fire, but not by much, he decided. Of course, on the trail, he'd be washing down his meal with water from a creek or his canteen, not a decent bottle of Chateau Fargeau. The train was traveling through western New York on its way to Pennsylvania. Outside the windows, all was dark except for occasional lights from a farmhouse or a small town. As always, the combination of food, wine, and the regular rhythm of the rails began to make Conrad sleepy. It was early yet, but he'd had a busy few days in Boston. Conrad patted his lips with his napkin.
I think I'm going to turn in.
A splendid idea, sir.
Arturo had relaxed some during the meal and seemed to enjoy it.
I'll prepare your berth as soon as we get back to the compartment. In fact, if you'd care to wait here for a few minutes, I'll go ahead and have it ready for you when you get there.
Conrad picked up the bottle, which had a little wine left in it.
All right. That's a good idea. I'll just finish this off and then stroll back to the Pullman.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
What for?
For the fine meal. And for saying, you know.
That we're friends? Don't worry about it. Once you've spent more time west of the Mississippi, you'll understand.
I suspect that I won't, but I appreciate the sentiment anyway.
Looking vaguely embarrassed by the show of any emotion, Arturo quickly left the dining car and headed back to the Pullman. Conrad took his time, lingering over the last of the wine. When he finally finished it off, he scrawled his name on the bill the waiter had left and stood up. As he walked through the passenger cars, he was aware of the looks people were giving him. Some of the men appeared to be openly resentful of his youth, his good looks, his obvious wealth. The women, on the other hand, were more circumspect in their glances, which were frankly approving. Some of the younger women even had bold invitation in their eyes as Conrad passed. Anytime anyone, male or female, caught his eye, he smiled, nodded, and moved on. He had finally moved far enough past Rebel's death that he could be attracted to a woman again without feeling too guilty about it. The striking, red-headed bounty hunter, Lace McCall, had made him realize that. But the matter of his missing children had come up, and he had shoved everything else to the back of his mind. He didn't have time for anything except the quest to find his stolen son and daughter. He would see Lace again one of these days, he promised himself, as he stepped through the vestibule of the second passenger and onto its platform. One of these days. The shape came out of the darkness and slammed into him with terrific force, knocking him sideways. The impact rammed his hip against the railing around the platform, and his momentum nearly carried him over it. He caught a bare glimpse of the ground rushing past beneath him as the train rocked along at a mile-a-minute clip. His hand shot out and grabbed the railing. He felt himself flip completely over in the air, heels overhead, as he fell. Maintaining his grip on the rail, he hung by one hand, with his feet dangling mere inches above the roadbed. Grunting with the effort, he reached up with his other hand and managed to clamp it onto the rail. The shape of a man on the platform loomed over him.
Did you think you could get away with what you did to me, Browning? Did you really?
As Conrad gritted his teeth in an effort to hang on, he recognized Eddie Murtaugh's voice. He didn't know where Murtaugh had come from. He would have sworn the platform was empty when he'd stepped out of the passenger car's vestibule.
I don't care about that Tarleton bitch or those little bastards of hers. It's personal now. You came into Serrano's and killed my friends. You tried to kill me. You will pay for that.
I made you. Big for your life, too. That's what you can't swallow.
Go to hell!
Light from somewhere glinted briefly on the blade of a big knife Murtaugh held in his hand.
We'll just see how long you can hang on once I start sawing your fingers off.
Conrad knew he couldn't hang on. He was about to let go with one hand and reach under his coat for one of the revolvers in the shoulder harness. An awkward, risky move he probably couldn't complete before that blade came chopping down into his fingers. When, suddenly, more light spilled over the platform.
Get away from him!
Arturo lunged across the gap between cars from the platform of the Pullman. Murtaugh whirled toward him and thrust out the heavy-bladed knife. Arturo grabbed the gang leader's wrist with both hands and twisted, keeping Murtaugh from sinking that cold steel into his belly. Murtaugh crashed his left fist into Arturo's face. Conrad knew Arturo didn't stand a chance against Murtaugh and wouldn't be able to hold him off for more than a few seconds. Those few seconds were precious, giving Conrad time to pour all his strength into his arms and shoulders and heave himself up far enough that he could hook a leg over the railing. Conrad swung over the rail and sprawled onto the platform, putting him in a good position to grab Murtaugh's knees and pull the man's legs out from under him. Murtaugh toppled over backward. Conrad clambered up the man's body, grabbed Murtaugh's wrist, and slammed his knife hand against the edge of the platform. Murtaugh's fingers opened involuntarily, and the knife went flying away into the dark. Conrad's left hand caught hold of Murtaugh's throat. He brought his right fist down with stunning force into Murtaugh's face. The blow wasn't strong enough to knock all the fight out of the man. Murtaugh brought the heel of his hand up under Conrad's chin, forcing his head back and making him loosen his grip on Murtaugh's throat. Proving as hard to hang on to as he had in their previous battle, Murtaugh writhed away and aimed a kick at Conrad's head. The kick landed on his left shoulder, making Conrad's arm go numb. He struggled to get up while Murtaugh scrambled nimbly to his feet. Before Murtaugh could do anything else, Arturo went after him, swinging wild punches.
Arturo, no!
The servant was no match for a brawler like Murtaugh. He easily blocked the valet's blows and threw a punch of his own that rocked Arturo's head back. Stumbling backward, Arturo toppled off the platform, falling into the gap between the cars.
No!
Curling his right hand in a fist, Conrad hammered a punch into Murtaugh's face. Then another, and another, driving Murtaugh toward the railing at the side of the platform. Conrad pulled into him, using his superior size and strength to push Murtaugh over the railing. Murtaugh was gone in the blink of an eye. It was only when Conrad swayed forward and gripped the rail that he saw the train was passing over a trestle high above a river. Unable to believe what he was seeing and hearing, Conrad leaped forward and leaned down to grab the wrist, just as Arturo was about to knock on the platform again. Conrad lifted Arturo onto the platform and threw his arms around him in a hug.
I thought that bastard Murtaugh had killed you.
Yes, well, it wasn't for lack of trying.
Come on, let's get you back to the compartment.
Behind Conrad, the door into the passenger car opened and the conductor strolled out, too late for all the excitement he was blissfully unaware of.
Mr. Browning, is something wrong?
Yes, my friend here isn't feeling well. I was helping him get some fresh air.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Is there anything I can do to help?
No, thank you. I'll be fine. Perhaps if I lie down for a short time.
Oh, let me give you a hand there, Mr. Browning.
Between them, they got Arturo into the Pullman compartment, where he stretched out on one of the short divans that pulled out into a berth.
Well, let me know if there's anything else I can do to help.
I certainly will. How did you happen to come out there just in time to save my life?
I thought you would be back here sooner. I just stepped out to see if you were coming.
Another few seconds and I would have been a dead man. Thanks, Arturo. I'm obliged to you.
Nonsense, sir. It is my job to assist you in any way possible.
It's not your job to take on cold-blooded killers, but you jumped right in anyway.
Was that Mr. Myrtle?
It was.
But, what happened to him?
He won't bother us anymore.
The train rolled on, heading west into the night. The bustling city of Kansas City, Missouri, sat on the border between the states of Missouri and Kansas, but it was a border town in other ways, too. For years, Westport Landing, one of the frontier communities that had developed into Kansas City, had been a major jumping-off place for the wagon trains carrying immigrants to the west. Later, as civilization extended itself past the Missouri River, Kansas City had become the primary market for grain grown in the vast flat farmland surrounding the city. But it was also a cow town, as the railroads brought shipments of cattle from the empire-sized ranches of Texas and elsewhere. Huge stockyards covered much of the area known as West Bottoms, just west of downtown, and you were just as likely to see cowboys walking down the street, spurs jingling, as you were to bump into sober-suited businessmen. Kansas City was the true boundary between East and West, Conrad thought, as he stepped down from the train in Union Station, followed by Arturo. The servant hurried off to supervise the unloading of their luggage. Conrad set off across the crowded platform toward the station master's office. He had sent a telegram to the station master from back up the line, advising the man when to expect him. The woman who sat at the desk in the outer office recognized his name. She stood up and smiled at him.
Please sit down, Mr. Browning. I'll let Mr. Crowley know you're here.
Conrad noticed she was quite attractive, with upswept brown hair and a fine figure that the high-necked, long-sleeved dress she wore failed to conceal. Evidently, more and more women were working in business offices. The secretary came back a moment later and motioned for him to go through the door to the inner office.
Mr. Crowley will see you now.
Conrad went in and shook hands with a tough-looking gray-haired man.
It's good to see you again, Mr. Browning.
We've met before?
Not exactly. I used to be conductor, and your mother rode on my train several times. You were with her, but you were only a boy, so I don't expect you remember.
My mother traveled a lot. She had so many different business interests, and she liked to keep up with all of them, as personally as she could.
I imagine you're the same. Have a seat. Would you like a cigar or a drink?
No, thanks.
What can I do for you, Mr. Browning? Your wire said something about the records from 3 years ago.
I'm looking for two women who would have been traveling with a pair of infants, twins. I'd like to find out where they went when they left Kansas City.
Two women and two children. That's all you know? And this was 3 years ago? You realize, of course, Mr. Browning, that thousands and thousands of passengers have come through this station since then?
Of course. But I can narrow it down to a fairly short period of time. And surely there are records of how many tickets were sold and what the destinations were.
Mr. Browning, what you ask is impossible. Yes, there are records of how many tickets were sold, but there's no way to tell which passengers bought which tickets. All we have are totals.
Conrad's heart sank. The news was bitterly disappointing. As he mulled over the station master's words, it occurred to him perhaps there was another way, a longer shot even than checking the railroad's records, but it might provide at least some information.
Do you have someone who's worked here for several years? Someone who would have been here 3 years ago during the period I'm interested in?
Yes, of course. A number of our employees have been here for a long time.
If I could talk to them, ask them some questions.
Do you really think that would do any good? Mr. Browning, with all due respect, so many people go through here, I doubt if any of the employees would remember someone from last week, let alone 3 years ago.
They might remember one of the women I'm looking for.
With Pamela's beauty and the way she carried herself like some sort of royalty, with all the attendant arrogance and abrasiveness, she was hard to forget. Or so Conrad hoped.
Certainly you can talk to them. I've no objection to that at all. I just think you should be prepared for the possibility that you won't find out anything.
Can you give me a list of the people who were working here 3 years ago?
Give me a couple hours.
Fine. I appreciate this, Mr. Crowley.
I'm glad to do it. You're a major stockholder on this railroad, Mr. Browning, as your mother was before you. Should I send the list to your hotel?
That's fine. I'll be at the Cattleman's Hotel.
All right. I'm not sure exactly what you're looking for, Mr. Browning, but I wish you the best of luck in your search.
Arturo had engaged a buggy for the two of them and a wagon for their luggage while Conrad was talking to the station master. It didn't take long to reach the Cattleman's Hotel in downtown. With ranchers and cattle buyers making up most of its guests, Conrad thought he would feel more comfortable there than in some stuffier place. His time in the West had changed him, made him less tolerant of the artificiality that pervaded much of the East. Which was not to say that the Cattleman's wasn't a nice place. The lobby was luxuriously furnished, and the dining room was famous for its steaks. The desk clerk greeted Conrad warmly and summoned bellboys to take the luggage up to the suite he'd reserved. As promised, a messenger delivered the list of longtime employees that Crowley sent over, but it was too late in the day to return to Union Station and start interviewing them. The next morning, Conrad used the station master's office to talk to them, but it didn't take long to realize that Crowley had been right. Even though the ticket clerks, porters, and other employees wanted to be helpful, again and again Conrad got nothing but blank looks as he described Pamela Tarleton and explained that she would have been traveling with another woman and two babies. He added that she would have been hard to please and likely would have bossed around anyone she encountered, but that didn't help. When he had talked to everyone on Crowley's list, the station master came back into the office.
Any luck?
Conrad slumped in the chair behind the desk and shook his head.
Not a bit. No one remembers her.
I was afraid of that. I did some checking through our records just in case something might turn up, but no luck.
It's a dead end. The trail's too cold. There's no way to find out where she went.
Conrad looked at the list he had tossed onto the desk, and a thought occurred to him.
What about people who were working here 3 years ago but aren't now?
Crowley rubbed his jaw and frowned in thought.
Yes, there are some folks who fit that description, beginning with Ralph Potter.
Who's that?
Oh, he ran the station before I did.
Where can I find him? He's still alive, isn't he?
Oh, yes, he's still alive. I can give you directions to his place. I don't know if it'll help you. Ralph can be a little difficult.
I'll take that chance.
Crowley explained that Ralph Potter had bought a small farm south of town when he retired from the railroad. He told Conrad how to find it, and then warned him again that Potter didn't like strangers.
I'm sure I can handle him.
Still clinging to a shred of hope that the trail wasn't completely lost, Conrad left the depot and went back to the hotel. He told Arturo what he was going to do.
Would you like me to come with you, sir?
No, I'll be fine. I'm going to rent a horse and take a ride down to Potter's farm this afternoon.
The buckskin he had ridden while he was drifting across the Southwest was being well cared for at a livery stable in Santa Fe. Since he hadn't known where his quest would lead him, he'd had to leave the buckskin behind, and he would have to rely on other mounts. After lunch in the hotel's dining room, Conrad found a nearby livery stable and picked out a rangy gray gelding, renting the horse for the rest of the day along with a saddle and tack. He mounted up and made his way out of Kansas City. It took a while because the town was so big and sprawling. Eventually, Conrad found himself following a road that ran through mostly flat farmland. Here and there, a small hill rose, and there were stretches of uncultivated land as well. He wasn't quite sure if he was still in Missouri or had crossed into Kansas. The border ran right through the area, and a swing of 100 yards as the road curved could easily mean he was crossing from one state to the other. Not that it really mattered to him which state Ralph Potter lived in. He just wanted to talk to the man. Following Crowley's directions brought Conrad to a small farmhouse with a sod roof that looked like it had been there almost as long as the region had been settled. Corn grew in the fields on both sides of the narrow lane that ran from the road for a quarter of a mile to the house. A couple of cottonwoods shaded the house itself. A barn stood behind it, along with two smaller outbuildings. Conrad saw a covered well at the side of the house. It was a nice-looking place, especially for a man who had retired from being the station master of a busy depot at one of the country's busiest railroad hubs, or for anyone who wanted to live out the rest of his days in peace. Conrad reined to a halt in front of the house and was about to swing out of the saddle when a pack of 4 or 5 huge, shaggy dogs exploded around the corner of the building and charged at him in a yapping frenzy. The rented horse panicked and started to buck and rear. Conrad was a fine rider, and normally would have been able to stay in the saddle, but he'd been in the act of dismounting and was thrown off balance. He grabbed for the saddle horn, but missed. Instantly, the growling, snarling curs were all around him. His impulse was to reach for his guns and shoot them, but they held back, not attacking him, just surrounding and threatening him. Conrad was glad he hadn't started any gunplay when he heard a shotgun being cocked. He glanced around to see the menacing twin barrels of a greener approaching him. What really shocked him was the person pointing the scattergun at him. She was a beautiful girl, no more than 17 or 18 years old, with long, straight blonde hair hanging around her face and down her back.
Keep your hands away from them guns, mister, or I'll blow your damn head off.
Conrad swallowed hard and kept his hands well away from the guns under his coat. His hat had fallen off when he tumbled from the horse, and a hot prairie wind stirred his hair. The same wind moved several strands of the girl's long, fair hair in front of her face, but she didn't move to brush them away. All her attention was focused on the stranger, who lay there surrounded by the dogs.
Listen, take it easy. I mean no harm.
Shut up! Come out here from town to take our land away from us. I know your type of skunk when I see it.
The scornful lash of the girl's voice bothered Conrad almost as much as the shotgun she was pointing at him, or the slavering muzzles of the dogs all around him. She had taken him for some sort of town scoundrel with his tweed suit and rented horse.
Sarah Bell! What you got there, Sarah Bell?
I think it's another fella from the bank.
An elderly man limped into view. He wore gray-striped trousers with suspenders over a faded pair of red long johns. A black cap with a stiff bill perched on his head. Conrad looked at it for a second before he realized it was the same sort of cap worn by many men who worked for the railroad. The man was short and thin, with a leathery face and a spiky white beard.
Mr. Potter?
The man's pale blue eyes were deep set under shaggy brows. Those brows rose as his eyes widened in surprise.
You know me?
Of course he knows you. The bank sent him out here to cause more trouble for us, didn't it?
I'm not from any bank, and I'm certainly not here to cause trouble for you. My name is Conrad Browning. If you'll call these dogs off, I'll tell you why I came to see you.
The old man tugged thoughtfully at his beard.
Maybe we ought to listen to him, Sarah Beth.
No! You can't trust anybody from the city. You told me that.
Yeah. There's something about this young fella. Browning, did you say your name is? Any relation to Mrs. Vivian Browning?
She was my mother.
That made up the old-timer's mind. He reached over, took hold of the shotgun's barrels, and pushed them aside.
Get away from him, you blasted varmints! Let the man alone!
But you told me!
I know what I told you, girl! This fella is the son of the most decent ladies to ever walk the face of the earth. Every time a train she was on stopped in Kansas City, she made a point of it to come to my office and say hello to me.
Then you are Ralph Potter, the former station master.
That's right, young fella. Let me help you up.
Sarah Beth stood off to the side, scowling darkly at Conrad in suspicion.
I reckon Crowley told you where to find me.
That's right.
I heard about your mother passing away. God rest her soul. We're sure sorry to hear about it, too.
Thank you.
I reckon you must own her share of the railroad now.
Conrad nodded.
I've come to talk to you about the railroad, in fact.
Yeah, but I've been retired for a couple years now. I don't have anything to do with it anymore.
What I want to talk to you about happened 3 years ago, while you were still the station master.
All right. Well, why don't we go inside and get out of this hot sun?
That'll be fine. Thanks.
Now, Sarah Beth, fix us some lemonade.
The furnishings in the house were old and shabby, but the place was clean, almost spotlessly so. Potter and his granddaughter, she was too young to be his daughter, might be a little down on their luck, judging by Sarah Beth's talk about the bank, but they weren't allowing that to make them give up. Potter motioned Conrad into an armchair next to a small round table with a lace doily and a lamp sitting on it. The old-timer pulled up a ladder-back chair and sat on it while Sarah Beth disappeared into the kitchen.
Now, Mr. Browning, what can I do for you?
Like I said, I want to ask you about something that would have happened about 3 years ago. A young woman came through Kansas City on the train, probably heading west. She was traveling with another woman, I don't really know how old she was, and a couple of small children, infants, twins, a boy and a girl.
Potter took off the black cap and gave him a dubious frown.
Yeah, lots of folks come through Kansas City, Mr. Browning.
Yes, that's what people keep telling me.
I can't hardly remember.
It's possible this woman would have come to see you. She probably would have been upset about something and might have demanded some sort of special treatment.
Oh, you're talking about Miss Tarleton.
Conrad sat there, thunderstruck with surprise.
I remember her all right. Be hard to forget a lady like Miss Tarleton, if you ever had to deal with her.
That's putting it mildly. Go on, Mr. Potter.
Well, like you said, she was upset because the train she was on was mighty late, and she'd missed her connection to Denver. Now, I don't know what she thought I could do about it. It's not like I could reach out and catch that westbound and make it back up all the way to Kansas City just so she could get on it.
She was going to Denver, you say?
Well, that's where she was bound next. I seem to recall her saying she was going to stop there for a while. But the ticket she had would take her and the lady with her all the way to San Francisco. No charge for the two little ones, of course. We babies like that ride for free.
Conrad felt a little dizzy. This was exactly the sort of information he'd been looking for. He had Pamela's itinerary laid out before him. Sarah Beth came back from the kitchen carrying a tray with a couple of glasses of lemonade on it. She handed one to Potter and one to Conrad, not being very gracious about it.
Thank you.
Talking is thirsty work.
You're being very helpful, Mr. Potter. I had a feeling someone, somewhere along the way, must have remembered Pamela. You called her Miss Tarleton. Did you know her before she introduced herself?
Yeah, not really. Yeah, but when she said she was Clark Tarleton's daughter, I knew him all right. He had an interest in the railroad at one time, too. But whenever he came through the station, he wasn't near as nice as your mother always was. He seemed to think the world pretty much revolved around him. And I reckon Miss Tarleton inherited that same feeling from him.
Conrad nodded. That was Pamela, all right.
Did she tell you the two children were hers?
Nope. Didn't offer any explanation for them. I figured as much, though. I saw she didn't have no wedding ring on her finger, but it's not my place to judge. Mr. Browning, you can tell me to go to hell if you want, but, were those your kids?
That's right. Now you understand why I'm trying to find out where she went.
She stole your kids away. That's a mighty bad thing to do to a man.
I didn't even know about them until recently.
And now you want to find her and them.
Not Pamela. She's dead.
Potter looked shocked, and so did Sarah Beth, who had set the tray on a side table and withdrawn to a divan across the room.
What happened to the youngins?
That's what I'm trying to find out. Pamela left them somewhere, probably in the care of the servant who was traveling with her. And then she was killed in an accident. But my son and daughter are still out there somewhere, and I'm going to find them.
Good Lord. What a terrible thing.
I'd followed her trail to Kansas City, but I don't know where she went from there. Now I do. I assume she took the next train heading for Denver?
That's right. Since she missed her connection because the train she came in on was late, I made arrangements for her to stay at the best hotel in town, and the railroad paid for it. I didn't have to do that. It's not what we usually do, but I figured for somebody like Miss Tarleton.
And it got her off your back.
Yeah, that too. And the next morning, I sent a buggy in a wagon for him and saw to it personal-like that her bags got loaded on the train and she and the other lady were settled in a nice compartment with children. She was only delayed about 24 hours.
But you don't know what happened after that?
After the train pulled out? No, sir. I don't have any idea. Miss Tarleton and those kids rolled on out of my life, and I ain't seen any of them since.
The twins had to be somewhere between Kansas City and San Francisco. That was a vast stretch of territory, but it was better than having to search for them across the entire country. To cover the emotions coursing through him, he took a sip of the lemonade. It was pretty sour. Potter probably couldn't afford much sugar. The corn crop Conrad had seen on his way there had looked like a good one, but Potter might be cash poor at the moment. A lot of farmers wound up that way, with a crop in the field that might save them, but circumstances that closed in and didn't give them any time.
I can't thank you enough for your help. I'd like to give you something for your trouble.
Shucks! That isn't necessary.
Yes, it is. If the man wants to pay you for your help, it wouldn't be polite to turn him down. Besides, we have a payment due on that note.
Yeah. I know, Sarah Beth.
Don't worry, Mr. Potter. The help you've given me is well worth it.
Not to mention hope, Conrad thought. He took $200 from the wallet and held it out toward Potter. Before the old-timer could take it, Sarah Beth was on her feet and had come across the room to pluck the bills from Conrad's fingers.
I handle the money around here.
She got a better head for it than I do.
It didn't matter to Conrad who got the money. He'd gotten the information he needed.
Thank you for your hospitality and for your help.
You're mighty welcome, Mr. Browning. Like I said, your mother was always as nice as she could be to me.
The two men left Sarah Beth counting the money and walked out of the farmhouse.
Where are you staying in town, Mr. Browning? Just in case I think of anything else that might help you.
I'm at the Cattleman's Hotel. I'm not sure how long I'll be there. Until tomorrow, anyway.
He was going to have to do some thinking about how to proceed now that he knew what Pamela's destination had been 3 years earlier. It wouldn't do to take the train straight to San Francisco. Her letter had indicated she'd hidden the children somewhere in the West. They could be anywhere, Conrad thought. Anywhere.
Thanks again. I'm glad your granddaughter took the money. I hope it helps you out as much as you've helped me.
Granddaughter? Sarah Beth isn't my granddaughter. She's my wife.
During Conrad's ride back to Kansas City, he thought about the old man's surprising revelation. On the frontier, it wasn't uncommon to see young women married to much older men. It made sense. An older man usually had more to offer a wife financially. However, that didn't appear to be the case with Potter and Sarah Beth, and the age gap wasn't usually quite as wide as it was between them. Conrad hadn't known whether to congratulate the old goat or condemn him. One thing was certain. He couldn't continue traveling west on the train. The thought of rolling right past the place where his children were hidden made his stomach turn. No, Conrad decided, he was going to have to follow the steel rails, but on horseback, so he could stop at every town and ask questions. His heart sank a little as he realized it was going to take months, unless he was incredibly lucky and found the twins right away. He considered that unlikely. Pamela wouldn't have made it that easy. But if it took months, or if it took a year or more, he wouldn't give up the search until it was successful. He reined in for a moment before he reached the city and turned in the saddle to gaze off toward the west. His son and daughter were somewhere out there. Arturo was waiting anxiously when he reached the hotel.
How was your visit with the old station master, sir? Any results?
For a change, yes. That man Potter remembered Pamela. Even better than that, he knew where she was going. San Francisco.
I'll begin packing. I assume we're taking the next train west.
Not the train.
Then how are we traveling?
We're not traveling. Sorry, Arturo. But from here on out, I'll be going it alone.
What are you talking about? I thought you said Conrad Browning wouldn't travel without the ballet.
Maybe Conrad wouldn't, but Kid Morgan would.
Really? You're actually going to resurrect that, dime novel masquerade?
I told Claudius Turnbuckle and John Stafford that the kid would ride again. I wasn't sure how or when, but I had a feeling I wasn't done with Kid Morgan just yet.
You realize, of course, that you sound a bit mentally disturbed, talking about this mythical kid in the third person as if he actually exists.
Who's to say he doesn't, Arturo? Just because you're born with one name doesn't mean that's who you really are. Many of the Indians believe that when a young warrior goes on a vision quest, he becomes another person when the truth is revealed to him. And because of that, he takes another name. Maybe what I was doing all that time when I was drifting around as Kid Morgan was going on my own vision quest, finding out who I really am.
But what am I supposed to do? I gave up my previous employment to come east with you, you know.
I'm well aware of that. You'll continue to draw your full salary until you find another job that suits you, no matter how long it takes. I'll wire Claudius and make sure he understands that. You can take the train to San Francisco and he can help you, like he did before. You'll be fine, Arturo.
Begging your pardon, sir, but this job suits me.
Sorry. I'll be traveling by horseback. I'm going to have to stop at every little town on the railroad between here and California. Maybe the twins are in San Francisco, but Pamela could have stopped anywhere along the way and made arrangements to leave them.
Abandoned her own children, you mean?
A she-wolf has a lot more motherly instinct than Pamela Tarleton ever did. I suspect she found some family to take them in and paid the people well. Finding them isn't going to be easy.
You never thought it would be, but I can help.
That's all, Arturo. I'm going out to look for a better horse to buy. The one I rented won't do for a long trip. Going to need at least one pack animal, too. I'll eat in the hotel dining room tonight.
Very well, sir. Would you like me to lay out the garb you wear as Kid Morgan?
No. There'll be time for that later.
Conrad left the suite. He felt bad about Arturo's hurt feelings, but he couldn't see Arturo riding a horse all the way to California. The quest might not even stop there, Conrad thought. But it didn't matter. He would ride all the way to hell and back to find his kids, if he had to. Conrad returned the rented horse to the livery stable and had a look at the other stock the liveryman had to offer. None of them impressed him enough to buy one. There were other stables in Kansas City, and he would check all of them if he had to. By late afternoon, he found what he was looking for. He purchased a big, blaze-faced black gelding, along with a saddle and everything else he would need. Some men considered a blaze on a horse's face to be a flaw, a sign that the animal was lacking somehow, but Conrad had never felt that way. At the same barn, he purchased a large, sturdy mule to use as a pack animal. The mule would be able to carry the supplies he needed. He told the livery owner he would pick up both animals early the next morning. He was on his way back to the hotel when several cowboys stepped up onto the sidewalk in front of him. At least he took them for cowboys because of their well-worn range clothes. But as they came closer, he saw the hard eyes, the beard-stubbled jaws, the guns worn in thonged-down holsters. Conrad glanced at their hands and knew the truth. Their hands were calloused, but different from a puncher's hands would be. The calluses were signs of long hours spent practicing with a gun. Seeing the arrogant expressions on their faces as they strode along, Conrad moved to the edge of the sidewalk. It went against the grain for him to step aside for any man, but he was prepared to do so to avoid trouble. His mind was full of thoughts of his missing children. He was ready to step down into the gutter for a moment and let the hard cases have the sidewalk. It wasn't that simple. The nearest of the men reached out suddenly, grabbed Conrad's coat, and hauled him back so he blocked their way.
Where are you going, dude? You ain't good enough to share the sidewalk with the likes of us?
Instantly, alarm bells rang in the back of Conrad's mind. He knew without being told that if he hadn't tried to step aside, the hard case would have challenged him about that, too. The man was looking to start a fight. His left eye rolled a little to the side, seemingly independent of the right eye, which had a loco anger burning in it. Though the men seemed to be on the prod, Conrad thought he might be able to avoid trouble.
I was just trying to get out of your way, friend.
What the hell makes you think I'd be friends with a fancy pants farmer like you?
Just let me go. I don't want any trouble.
You hear that, Rankin? Sounded like a threat to me. Ain't you scared?
Scared of this sissy varmint? Hell, I bet he's about to piss his pants right now.
Not even close. You may be if you don't back off.
He didn't have much patience to start with, and it had just run out.
Dude's got a mouth on him.
Yeah, and I intend on shutting it.
A Kansas City police officer was probably within hearing distance of a shout for help, but Conrad didn't call out. Kid Morgan stomped his own snakes. The clothes were different, but suddenly it was the kid who glared defiantly at the man confronting him. For a second, the hard case's good eye widened slightly, as if he recognized the change that had come over his intended victim. But it wasn't enough to make him change his mind about what he was going to do next. He swung a fist at the kid's head. Jerking his head aside, the kid hooked a punch into the hard case's midsection, burying a fist deep in his belly and knocking the man's grip loose from his coat. As the man doubled over, the kid grabbed his shoulders and shoved him into the other troublemakers. A couple got their legs tangled up and fell on the sidewalk, but the other two closed in on the kid. Pedestrians nearby scattered, not wanting to get in the middle of a brawl, leaving a clear space on the sidewalk around the kid and the men attacking him.
Kill that son of a bitch! You don't get the money unless he winds up dead!
That changed everything. The kid knew instantly it wasn't a random encounter with some toughs eager to push somebody around. It was an ambush by hired killers who had been waiting for him to return to the hotel. It also told the kid several other things, but he didn't have time to ponder them. He devoted all his attention to not winding up dead. His hand shot out and grabbed the shirt fronts of two men. He bowled forward, forcing the two men he had hold of to stumble back toward the building behind them. He ran them into the wall hard enough to make the back of their heads bounce off the bricks. The impact was enough to stun them and put them out of the fight for a few moments. When the kid whipped around toward the two men in the street, he saw them clawing at the guns on their hips. The pretense of making it look like a casual encounter and a simple fight turned deadly was over. It was outright attempted murder now. The kid drew both his Colt Lightnings and fired. Both men fell lifeless to the ground. People down the street were yelling in alarm over the shots. With whistles shrilling and guns drawn, a couple of Kansas City police officers charged toward the scene. The kid knew they would be there in mere moments, so he moved quickly, stepping over to the only one of the hard cases who was relatively unhurt. The man stood against the wall of the building, eyes wide with fear. They widened more when the kid put the barrel of a Lightning under his chin.
Who hired you?
Rankin.
The one with the local wandering eye, the kid recalled. He glanced around. Rankin was the man he'd shot in the throat.
Why? Why did he want me dead?
I don't know. I swear it don't, mister. He just rounded up a few boys he knew and said he had a job for us. Said there was a man who needed to wind up dead.
You don't know who I am or why Rankin wanted to kill me?
I got no idea. I swear.
Get away from that man and drop those guns. Do it or we'll shoot.
The kid didn't have to look around to know the police had arrived. He knew they would make good on their threat. He stepped back, bent over, and carefully placed the Lightnings on the sidewalk. He didn't want to take a chance on damaging the guns by dropping them. The kid knew he wouldn't be able to ask any more questions of the two survivors from the gang that had tried to kill him, but that didn't really matter. He knew somebody else he could ask, just as soon as he got the chance. The soft yellow glow of lamplight through a window guided the kid through the dark night. He rode the big black gelding he had bought that afternoon. The horse's hoofbeats were enough to alert the dogs. They came charging out from under the farmhouse's porch. The black shied a little, spooking as the curs clustered around and barked furiously. The kid brought the horse under control with a firm hand on the reins and waited. He saw the light in the window go out abruptly, and then a second later the door swung back just enough to allow the barrel of a rifle to be thrust out.
Who's there?
I think you know the answer to that, Mr. Potter.
The kid was ready for the reaction he got. The kid didn't know where the bullet went, but it didn't come anywhere close to him. He had figured that accurate shooting in the darkness would be more than the old, terrified, retired station master could manage. Drawing his gun, not one of the .38 caliber Lightnings, but rather the Colt 45 he wore in a holster on his hip, the kid sent the black surging forward, scattering the dogs. When he was close enough, he left the saddle in a leap that carried him to the porch as the horse veered away. By the time the kid's boots hit the boards of the porch, Potter had managed to work the rifle's lever. The kid crouched low and drove a shoulder against the door. It banged inward, crashing into Potter and knocking the old man backward. Normally, the kid wouldn't be too rough with an old-timer like Potter, but the retired station master had tried to have him killed. The kid dropped a knee beside Potter and grabbed the Winchester with his free hand, wrenching it out of the old man's grip.
You better be careful with that shotgun, Sarah Beth. You shoot me and you'll blow the hell out of your husband with it, too.
The kid saw the pale blur of Sarah Beth's dress on the other side of the shabby living room. He couldn't see the greener, but thought there was a good chance she was pointing it at him.
Why shouldn't I? The old buzzard ain't much use to me. Anyway, if he's dead, this place would belong to me.
Yeah, that's what you want. A hard scrabble farm that the bank's going to take away from you sooner or later anyway.
You shut up! You don't know anything about it.
I know more than you think I do. I know he took Pamela Tarleton's money so he could buy this farm and ask you to marry him. I know you're the granddaughter of an old friend of his, and he's been lusting after you ever since you started sprouting. I found out a lot about both of you this evening after the men he sent to kill me didn't do their job.
I didn't send them to kill you. I didn't know what Rankin was going to do. I just went to see him and told him you were the man Miss Tarleton said might come after her. That's what she paid me to do 3 years ago. I reckon she must have paid him to.
Spill it all. Did she tell you to be so cooperative with me if I showed up and started asking questions? Did she pay you to lie to me about where she went?
No, it was the truth. The God's honest truth.
The kid took hold of the nightshirt Potter was wearing and hauled the old man into a sitting position.
Keep talking.
Sarah Beth, yeah, put that shotgun away and strike a light.
With obvious reluctance, she did so. She lit the lamp that one of them had blown out a few minutes earlier. Potter rubbed a lump on his forehead where the door had hit him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Browning. I never meant for you to get hurt.
What did you think Rankin and his hired guns were going to do?
I just tried not to think too much about that. I surely did.
Potter looked at the kid, and his bushy eyebrows rose in surprise as if he had just noticed what the visitor was wearing. The tweed suit of Conrad Browning had been replaced by high-topped black boots, black whipcord trousers, a soft buckskin shirt that was open at the throat, and a flat-crowned black Stetson with a concho-studded band. It was the gunfighter Kid Morgan who hunkered next to Potter, a heavy .45 revolver held with deceptively lethal casualness in his hand.
Tell me the whole thing.
Everything I told you was true. Miss Tarleton and the other lady and the baby showed up in Kansas City. I helped them out because they missed their connection. It was Miss Tarleton who told me where they were going, just like I told you. And she said you might come looking for them someday.
What did she want you to do if I showed up?
Just what I did. I'll tell you the truth, but there was something else.
Go find Rankin and tell him I was in town and on Pamela's trail?
Yeah. She paid me. Paid me well to do both those things. So I did. She said once I had done it, if I sent a wire to a man in Boston and told him what I'd done, he'd see to it that I got some more money for my trouble. I really need that money, Mr. Browning. This farm ain't been near as successful as I thought it would be, and it's hard work.
What's the name of the man you were supposed to get in touch with in Boston?
Davenport. Willard Davenport. I already sent the wire to him.
To collect your blood money.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
Maybe, in the strictest sense, the old man was telling the truth. He had to have guessed, though, that whatever Pamela had planned for Conrad Browning wouldn't be anything good. Despite that, Potter had given him a lot to think about, and the kid was grateful for that. The pieces of Pamela's plans were falling into place.
I'd like to make it up to you. Why don't you and Sarah Beth go into the bedroom for a while? She won't mind. And I'm sure you could do her hell of a lot more good than I ever could.
Forget it. That's not going to happen.
Oh.
What are you going to do to me?
The kid straightened to his feet and slipped the Colt back into leather.
If you've told me the truth, nothing. But if I find out you've lied to me, I'll be back to see you one of these days. Until then, you can live with your own greed and misery. I've heard Davenport's name. He's a lawyer in Boston. He'll probably send you the money Pamela promised you. I don't think it's going to make any real difference.
That's because you got plenty of money, Mr. Browning, and always have. You don't know what it's like. You just don't.
The kid thought about everything he had lost, everything he had struggled and was still struggling to get back.
Nobody does, Potter. Nobody does.
During the ride back to Kansas City, the kid thought hard about everything he had learned. After the shootout on the street near the Cattleman's Hotel, the police had taken him into custody and questioned him about the attempt on his life. Enough witnesses to the incident had spoken up that there was no question about his actions being self-defense. The kid hadn't told the police the ruckus was deliberate on the part of Rankin and the other men. He let them think it was an ugly fight that had spiraled out of control into deadly violence. The fact that all five men had bad reputations had helped convince the authorities. Rankin was well known as a troublemaker, and he was suspected of being involved in bank robberies and train holdups in Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska. Just the sort of man Pamela Tarleton would hire to carry out a killing, the kid mused. He had no doubt she had promised Rankin more money once Conrad Browning was dead. Rankin had probably had instructions to get in touch with Willard Davenport, too. Maybe Pamela had told Eddie Murtaugh the same thing, as well as Dr. Vernon Futrell. The lure of an extra payoff would have been necessary to ensure the men did exactly what Pamela wanted them to do. The kid couldn't help but wonder how many other men between there and San Francisco had received similar instructions from Pamela Tarleton. He was convinced Potter had told him the truth that afternoon. Pamela really had been headed for San Francisco when she came through Kansas City with her maid and the two children. She had wanted Conrad to know that. She was deliberately leaving a trail he could follow, luring him farther and farther west. At the same time, she had set up traps along the way, like the one with Rankin. The point of the whole thing was to torment Conrad. If he fell victim to one of the ambushes, then Pamela would have her revenge that way. But if he survived, as he had so far, he would continue to be tormented by the knowledge that she had stolen his children away from him. The whole thing was a two-edged sword, and it was one of the most diabolical schemes he had ever encountered. What made it even more impressive, in its own macabre way, was that it was actually a contingency plan on Pamela's part. The main thrust of her vengeance had been rebels' kidnapping and murder, along with the attempts to kill the kid after that. There were no limits to her evil, he thought. She had come up with ways to torture him from beyond the grave. When he got back to the hotel, he would send wires to Charles Harcourt and Jack Mallory, asking them to investigate Willard Davenport and his dealings. It would be a long shot, but maybe they could find out something about other traps that might be waiting for him somewhere up ahead on Pamela's trail. With that decision made, he reconsidered another one. When he reached Kansas City, he took the horse back to the stable where he had bought it.
I'll be back for him in the morning.
The clerk in the hotel lobby looked puzzled by the kid's clothes, but he recognized the tall, sandy-haired man as Conrad Browning. The kid got a couple of telegraph forms from the clerk, printed his messages, and shoved them back across the desk.
See that these are sent right away.
Of course, sir. Is there anything else I can do for you?
Where's the closest wagon yard? I need to buy a buggy in the morning.
Armed with that information, he went upstairs. Arturo was still awake and fully dressed, of course. He would have been no matter what time it was when the kid got back.
Did you find out what you wanted to know, sir?
I did. Pamela was behind the whole thing. She paid off Potter and the leader of the men who jumped me later in the afternoon. She promised them more money through a Boston lawyer. They were successful in carrying out their orders.
To have you killed, you mean?
The kid inclined his head in agreement.
No offense, sir, considering that you were once engaged to the lady in question. But was there no end to the woman's deviousness?
Evidently not. That's the reason I made up my mind about something.
And what might that be, sir?
You're coming with me, after all.
An excellent decision, I must say. But what prompted you to reconsider the one you made earlier, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm liable to run into one trap after another, all the way to San Francisco. I'm going to need somebody watching my back, and you did save my life on the train coming out here. I know I can count on you, Arturo.
Indeed you can, sir. You won't regret this.
You know, of course, it's going to be dangerous.
Of course. But, after all, I'm going to be in the company of a notorious gunfighter, aren't I?
First thing in the morning, they went to the wagon yard. The kid couldn't imagine Arturo riding horseback all the way to California, if that was what it took. But the valet could drive a buggy that far, as long as they didn't have to travel through territory that was too rough for such a vehicle. If they did, well, the kid would deal with that when the time came. They settled for a buckboard with a single seat and enough room behind it to carry quite a bit of their gear. The kid wouldn't have to leave behind as much as he had expected to. Between the buckboard and the pack mule, they would be able to take plenty of supplies with them. The kid made arrangements to have a cover added to the buckboard so Arturo would have at least a little protection from the sun and the rain. The owner of the wagon yard promised to have the buckboard ready to roll by that afternoon. The kid and Arturo went back to the hotel to pack. When they entered the lobby, the clerk saw them.
Mr. Browning!
The kid went over to the desk.
What is it?
I have a response to the telegrams you sent out last night.
The man handed over a Western Union envelope. The kid tore it open and slid out the yellow flimsy inside. His eyes quickly scanned the words printed on it. The wire was from Charles Harcourt and explained that the lawyer hired by Pamela, Willard Davenport, was refusing to cooperate and wouldn't admit he knew who Pamela Tarleton was. Harcourt could sue in an attempt to force him to open his records, but that would take a long time and might not be successful in the end. In the meantime, Jack Mallory was conducting a more discreet investigation of his own. Reading between the lines, the kid knew Harcourt and Mallory were trying to come up with something they could use to blackmail Davenport into talking. Mallory was enough of a big Irish bulldog that he stood a good chance of finding something they could use against the attorney. It was a dirty way to play the game, but not nearly as dirty as the tricks Pamela had pulled. Anyway, it wasn't a game, the kid thought. It was business. Deadly serious business. That afternoon, Arturo returned to the wagon yard and picked up the buckboard while the kid got the black gelding and the pack mule from the livery stable. It was late enough in the day that they wouldn't get very far before having to stop and make camp for the night.
Are you sure you wouldn't rather wait and get a fresh start in the morning?
Really, sir, I think I know you better than that by now. I can tell you are anxious to be on your way, and this will give me a chance to become accustomed to driving the buckboard before I have to handle it for an entire day.
Well, that's a good point. We'll load up and light a shuck out of here.
Crossing the country by train was vastly different from doing it on horseback and in a buckboard. It was going to be a real education in frontier life for Arturo. He had experienced some of that while he was working for Count Fortunato, but not like he was about to. They carried their belongings downstairs, the kid refusing the help of a porter. Now that he had slipped back into the personality of Kid Morgan, his impulse was to do things for himself, rather than waiting for somebody else to take care of a chore for him. It was different where Arturo was concerned. The Italian undoubtedly still saw himself as a servant, but to the kid's mind, they were rapidly becoming partners. That was what happened when you fought side by side with a fellow and shared danger together. Those bonds went deeper than boss and employee. The sun was still fairly high in the sky when they crossed the bridge that paralleled the railroad trestle over the Missouri. The kid rode slightly ahead, leading the pack mule, and Arturo guided the buckboard after him. The shrill whistle of a train made the kid look to his left, where he saw a locomotive crossing the trestle with a long string of cars behind it. Smoke puffed from the big engine's diamond-shaped stack. Westbound. Headed for California and all the bright promises that lay between here and there, the kid thought. Headed into the unknown, because no man truly knew what the next day would bring. He and Arturo were headed in the same direction, and the kid was ready for whatever the journey might bring. They covered several miles the first day and camped on the bank of a creek that flowed into the Kansas River from the north. They planned to follow the railroad tracks, which ran along with the river past Abilene, to the point where the Saline and Smoky Hill Rivers flowed together to form the Kansas. From there, the railroad continued running almost due west, the kid knew, though the rivers twisted and turned away from the steel rails and then came back again. Over the campfire that night, the kid mused as he sipped from a cup of the good coffee Arturo had brewed.
If Pamela hid the twins somewhere along the way, she likely would have done it someplace the train was already scheduled to stop. If she'd gone too far away from the railroad, she'd have to hire a wagon and a driver, and I don't see her doing that. We'll have to stop in every settlement where the train stops.
But I was under the impression Miss Tarleton was capable of almost anything, sir. You can't be sure she didn't leave the train and strike out on her own with her children and her servant.
No, that's true. I can't be sure. But that's what my gut tells me, and I've learned to play my hunches.
If you're wrong, it's possible we may travel all the way to San Francisco without finding the children.
I know. Believe me, I know.
What will you do then?
Reckon we'll turn around and start back this way. Do it all over again.
That could take years.
Yeah, it could.
Arturo didn't say anything for a long moment.
Are those wolves?
No, coyotes.
Are they dangerous?
Not to a man who can stand on his own 2 feet. If you were wounded and there was a whole pack of them, they might come after you, but otherwise you don't have anything to worry about.
I see. Mr. Browning.
Just call me Kid.
Are there savages out here?
You mean Indians?
Yes, sir. Kid.
There may be some still roaming around. Most of them are on reservations now, though.
Are they dangerous?
There haven't been any Indian fights in these parts for a long, long time, Arturo.
Ah, well, that's good to know. I wouldn't want to be scalped.
Neither would I.